Let's dive into the very long story of Joseph. It actually takes up the rest of the book of Genesis. And it starts in chapter 39, verse number 1, where we are reminded of Joseph's situation thanks to his jealous brothers. And that is, he was sold into slavery as a 17-year-old. So Genesis 39, 1. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Now, we already gained this information in an earlier section of Genesis before we were kind of sidetracked into the story of Judah's family tree. And I told you at that time that I disagree with the English translation of the job of Potiphar. The Hebrew is literally the butcher, or the chief butcher. The Greek Old Testament translates it as the chief cook or chef. Now, our English translators have assumed that the word butcher here is used as a symbol of someone who kills others. And I don't think that's the case, and neither did the early Jewish historian Josephus. He believed, as the text literally says, that Potiphar was the chief cook or chef of Pharaoh. And this shouldn't surprise us then later when we see other members of the food services staff in the palace of Pharaoh being associated with Potiphar. So I believe that Potiphar is effectively the head of food services in the royal palace of Egypt. And that's the tack that I'm going to take from here on out. So when you don't hear me talking about Pharaoh being some sort of military guy, you'll understand now why that is the case. So let's read verse 1 of chapter 39 again with what I believe is the proper English translation. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the chief chef, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. And he who is was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that he who is was with him, and that he who is caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph, being 17 years old, is given certain tasks around the house of Potiphar, and he is good at it because God's blessing is on him. And it doesn't take very long for Potiphar to figure that out. And what happens when the boss sees that you're really good at something? That's correct. He gives you more things to be in charge of. And so Joseph, over the next few years, continues to have more and more things given into his charge by his boss, Potiphar. Verse number 4. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. Now that didn't happen instantly. It probably happened over several years. And I am guessing by the time that this next stage of the story arrives, Joseph is already in his 20s. He has reached his adulthood. Verse number 5. from the time that he made him overseer of his house and over all that he had, he who is blessed the Egyptian house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of he who is was on all that he had in house and field. This is part of the blessing of Abraham. God said to Abraham, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. So Potiphar is getting the overflow of the blessing of Joseph. Verse 6, so he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So Potiphar had nothing to worry about in his household. He took care of things at work for the food services of the palace, but when he came home, Joseph had everything under control, and Potiphar could just put his feet up and sit in his most favorite chair and just enjoy his life when he was off work. Now, verse 6, the second half of it tells us this bit of information. Now, Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. So he is, he's a hunk. He's that very handsome bachelor that all the young ladies would like to have. Unfortunately, he is also in constant contact with the lady of the house, Potiphar's wife. And as often happens, she develops an infatuation with him. Verse number 7. After a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. So she wants to have an affair with him. She wants to have a sexual relationship that is ongoing with this young, handsome, successful man that she sees all the time. But Joseph is a righteous man. And he knows that that would be inappropriate, and he says so. Verse 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. He's put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am. So he gives the sense that he's effectively running the entire household. He is, in that sense, equal with Potiphar. He has the authority over all the other servants. So he's not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. So Joseph says, I can run everything in this household. I enjoy all the privileges of being the head of this household in the stewardship position. The only thing that is clearly off limits is you, because you're married to the boss. Then he says, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it's not just simply morally wrong against Potiphar. It would be wrong in the eyes of God, and that's much more important. Verse 10. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. So she just keeps this going all the time, day in and day out. Whenever Potiphar is off to work, she spends the day trying to get Joseph in bed. And he never gives in. He stands firm. And you've got to give him credit on that. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men in the house was there in the house. Now, how did that happen? All of us have our suspicions, don't we? Mrs. Potiphar had a plan. She would dismiss the household staff so that she could be completely alone in the house with Joseph. I would guess that somehow she got it in her head that the only reason he keeps refusing me is because there might be witnesses that would report our affair to Potiphar. So if I remove those impediments, if I get everybody out of the house so that it's just him and me, we can have our little tryst. We can have our little rendezvous. And then she caught him by his garment and said, "Lie with me." Now, the garment that's mentioned here is more than likely just the little skirt that servants wore. If you go and look at a lot of the images that come from ancient Egypt, you will see that there's very few men that wear shirts. They pretty much have this little skirt around their hips, and that's it. And so that's more than likely what she grabs hold of. And it says there that he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. So he slipped out of his skirt. Now, he would have had a loincloth or some sort of equivalent to underwear on underneath that little skirt. So he runs off, leaving his clearly identifiable skirt in her hands. Now, as soon as she saw that he'd left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them. Now, before we get to what she said, let's understand what the psychology is here. He has rebuffed her for a long period of time. And now when she gets physical and actually tries to grab hold of him and even force him into this, he runs away. And there is the potential that he would feel this is serious enough that he needs to report it. That he needs to talk to his boss and say, "Boss, your wife tried to rape me today." She can't let that happen. She also may be personally insulted that he won't do this, even when she makes it absolutely the easiest thing in the world for him to do. And so she takes preemptive action, and she starts setting up the story. So she calls those men of the household back into the house, and then she says to them, "See, he," meaning Potiphar, "has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us," or to make fun of us. "And he came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice." So her story is, "I was almost raped by this Hebrew that my husband brought in. And it was because I was alone in the house with him that he tried this." Verse 15, "And as soon as he heard that I'd lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled out and got out of the house. And then she laid up her garment by her until his master came home." So she tries to set the story as she was the victim of an attempted rape. And she's got evidence of it. She's got the clothing, the personal skirt of the overseer of the household, Joseph. And I suspect that those servants knew better. But they're only servants. What really matters is what Potiphar thinks. So he comes home. Verse 17, "And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us,'" so she blames him, you know, "'came in to make mockery of me, to laugh at me, to have sport with me, to basically have sex with me. He came in to rape me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. And as soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, 'This is the way your servant treated me,' his anger was kindled." So he is mad. He is angry about this charge of attempted rape against Joseph. Now, I have to say that Potiphar might have intended to execute him at first. But I think it's possible that after he took him and put him in confinement, that he began to maybe second guess his wife's story. But he can't prove that what she said is inaccurate, and nobody else saw it. So I think he may have decided not to execute him, but just simply let him be in confinement. Now, he is, as I said, the head of food services. So he's got a ton of people working for him. And part of his responsibilities would be to discipline the members of the food service staff, all the way from the supervisors down to the lowest member of the waiting staff. So if you're going to do discipline from time to time, you might need to have a place to put people for long-term confinement. So there is likely a jail or a confinement area as part of his area of responsibility. So that's where Joseph gets stuck. It says in verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison. The word actually has to do with a pit, a roundhouse. And so it's probably built similar to a rounded cistern, and you're put down in the bottom and you have to just spend your time there. So he put him in the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. So Pharaoh's staff members that are in trouble are kept in this place, and Potiphar seems to have the right to put people in there too. Verse 21, but he who is was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love. That's chesed, is the Hebrew word. It's a really interesting word. I like to translate it with a bit longer phrase of this idea of positive emotional attachment. So, God likes Joseph. God wants what's best for Joseph, and God intervenes on Joseph's behalf. So, that's what this word is all about. So, he who is was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So, this guy works for Pharaoh and Potiphar, I would guess. And so he's in charge of keeping the prisoners in line. Now, over this period of time, and again, we don't know how long it is, but I'm guessing it may be months or even several years that this, let's call him the warden of the prison, identifies Joseph as a really good guy. He's very helpful and useful. And he turns him into a trustee, as prisons often have, and pretty soon he becomes the head trustee. Verse 22, the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge, because he who is was with him. And whatever he did, he who is made him succeed. So there we have the blessing again. He who blesses Joseph is going to be blessed by God. And so this prison is running smoothly. I mean, exceptionally smoothly. And that brings us then, finally, to a time marker that we can put a date on. And that is chapter number 40. Sometime after this, Now, the sometime is when Joseph is 28 years old. We know that because his age is given when he's gotten out of prison, and that's going to take 2 years from this story. So Joseph has been in Egypt 11 years. Some of those years he worked with Potiphar, and some of those years he has worked as the head trustee in the prison. And now we go to what happened. The cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. So we've got another couple of food service workers. You've got the guy who's in charge of the wines, and you've got the guy who's in charge of all the baked goods. So these guys probably worked with Potiphar on a regular basis. I suspect that he may have been in charge of them. Now, what did they do? The guess of some is that they were implicated in a plot to kill the king. Now, is that accurate? We don't know. But something happened that got them both tossed in here until their cases could be adjudicated. Verse 2, the Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. He put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard and in the prison where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them. He attended them, and they continued for some time in custody. So how long that is, we don't know. Several days, maybe weeks. Now, one night, they both dreamed. And these dreams come from God. We know that because they come to pass as Joseph interprets them. So the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each his own dream and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw them and saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, "Why are your faces downcast today?" And they said to him, "We've both had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them." Now, there were professional dream interpreters in Pharaoh's court. Pardon me. But they don't have access to them. Instead, God has put them and given them this dream, these dreams so that Joseph can be identified as God's prophet. So Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me." And so the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him. So Joseph is aware he has a gift for interpreting God-given dreams. So he says, "Tell me about it." And so here's the chief cupbearer's dream. "In my dream, there was a vine before me. And on that vine, there were three branches. And as soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth and the clusters ripened into grapes." So you see all this happening in fast motion, you know. "And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and I pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand." So he sees himself harvesting the wine from these three grape clusters. And so Joseph said to him, "This is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer." So the cupbearer didn't understand it, and he was upset about it, and now Joseph has explained it, and he's excited to wait and see what happens in 3 days. Joseph tells him, "Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen, kidnapped out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit." And so that's where we get this idea that this little roundhouse is kind of a cistern sort of arrangement. Now, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph. So this guy's like, oh, well, that didn't sound like a bad thing. Let me see what my dream means. I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. The birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Now, I don't know why he thinks that that might be able to be interpreted well. It sounds like a pretty negative dream to me. And it was. And Joseph told him what it was. Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. And in 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you. So he uses similar language, but this time with a negative twist. And he's going to take your head, and then he's going to hang you on a tree, and the birds are going to eat your flesh. So Joseph has told them each, something's going to happen in 3 days. Now we'll learn in the next verse, it's going to be Pharaoh's birthday in 3 days. And the baker is going to be executed. Whatever it was that he was in trouble with Pharaoh over is going to get him executed. But the chief cupbearer is going to be brought back on staff, and everything's going to be fine with him. Now, Joseph, knowing this, asks one favor in payment. When you get back into good graces of Pharaoh, let him know I'm a kidnapped person. I don't belong here. I am not a legitimate slave, and I didn't do anything wrong to get me in this hole. You need to get me an audience with the Pharaoh so that I can plead my case and go home. That's his wish. That's his desire. Tomorrow, we will see what actually happens at the hand of God to make sure that Joseph and his entire family is safe and sound.